Уважаемые участники и гости,
dear participants and guests of the forum, we continue our program.
Новый курс
в session, the new course in the new foreign policy. The speaker is director of the information and print department of the Russia's foreign ministry, Мария Закарова. Good afternoon.
Уважаемые коллеги, друзья,
dear colleagues, friends, dear guests.
Формат заявлен как наш с вами интерактивный.
We are supposed to have an interactive discussion, but I will allow myself, as far as I have prepared, some citations, quotations, some dates, figures. Let me make a brief introduction. I cannot say that it will be brief, and we'll proceed with a Q&A. I see a lot of guests from different countries. How do you like Moscow? A couple of days ago, our Italian guests arrived to Moscow. Quite big businessmen. This was their first trip to Moscow, and they were quite aged, and still the first time in Moscow. And I communicated to them, I said, how do you find Moscow? And they said that this is a miraculous city, this is a fabulous city. And I said, if they try to scare you with isolation, don't say no, this is a good thing, but it matters what you do about that, how you dispose of that. Let me start with a date, because this is June the 10th, and the forum, your forum, opened, and this is our common shared forum, it becomes our common forum. It was kickstarted yesterday on June 9th. What this date is about? Some would say this is Monday. Some would say that this is the first 10 days of, or the first week of summer. And others would say that this is not just a date, but a very significant date, not just a figure, not just some mark, but this is a jubileum. Take a wild guess. No guesses. Okay, let me remind you. It is exactly 210 years ago, on the 9th of June, 1815, the city of Vienna saw a conclusion of the Congress of States, and it put an end to chaos, to devastation that was arranged by Napoleon in Europe. That Congress was international, certainly, and Russia was represented by Alexander I. Let me share some historical note. This is following that Congress in Vienna. A big part of Duchess of Warsaw was included into the Russian Empire, since then being called the Poland, and the winners in that war redrawn the borders in Europe once again. So this is just a lesson of history, because very often we are told that we are an empire, and I remind every now and then why the borders would be redrawn, would be changed, because actually you have to think twice before you invade us or try to invade us. And once, actually, a war is waged against us, we become bigger in terms of the territory. This is a historical fact. But another thing I would like to stress. The very first system of collective security emerged. The so-called Vienna system of international relations, which sometimes is being called the system of the European concert. That's very important for today as well. And we'll get back to that topic. What that system is about? What is that system that was settled under the aegis of the Holy Union? Thanks to the victorious and glorious Russian weapons, that union turned out to be quite strong. All the the countries then try to weaken Russia. And apart from the Crimean War, we can actually remember all the attempts to undermine the Russian statehood, starting with Decembrists and ending with the terrorists in late 19th century, early 20th century. But the very principle of the collective security and global responsibility of the powers, even in those turbulent times, stood the test of time. And the credit certainly goes to the talent to Russian diplomats, Earl Nesselrode, Razumovsky, the stability of that European system of international relations. And once again, I'm speaking about that very system that emerged and that was set 210 years ago, not the today's one, and not the one that was proposed by the OSCE. And 50 years before Potsdam and Yalta conferences, who supported the strength of that system? These were the Russian regiments. Therefore, we see the rise, the economical rise of the cultural and creative life in Europe and in Russia, the development of philosophical ideas, not the destructive ones, but the constructive ones, creative ones. This is thanks to the Russian soldiers. These things happened. And that's why 200 years ago, the International Congress was over and it set a diplomatic end to the balance of forces. For the first time, the responsibility of great powers was confirmed. They committed themselves to maintain peace and security. This is the burden and this is the glory that we still preserve until today. This is the first thing I want to say, speak about the dates. That's a global date. That's a founding date. And it contains everything and it reflects everything. And there is one more date, the 9th of June, 1918. This is quite a local date. On the one hand, we may say that it is even a private or individual or personal one. On the 9th of June 1918, one of the greatest Russian philosophers of the 20th century, Sergei Bulgakov, became a priest, and he was since then called Father Sergei. You may ask why I mentioned that, why it has anything to do with international affairs. And certainly we'll not deep dive into his legacy, into his writings. And you can acquaint yourself with his works, they are publicly available. But there is one nuance. Just when the Vienna system that was operational for 100 years was falling apart, one of the wisest people of the early 20th century, Sergei Bulgakov, and I'm not the one who called him the wisest. This is what Metropolitan Antoni Kropovitsky said. So this is quotations. He called him one of the wisest people on earth. And he was an MP and he was very knowledgeable of the Western philosophy. And from the very beginning of his career, Bulgakov attributed himself to Marxists. But end of the day, by means of discoverings and by means of experience, life experience, and serving in the church, he opted for the faith, for the religion. This is where he found the answers to all his questions. In 1918 in Moscow, certainly, it was a very brave act, almost a noble deed. And the philosopher was arrested for that and then had to migrate. But he didn't give up his faith. And he used to be priest until his death later on. And finishing that historical lesson and probably with a grain of philosophy, let me proceed with the agenda of today. And proceeding from the past and the present, let us think about the future. Now, just like 200 years ago, we see a conflict which is perceived by most of the Russian society, and we now see that it is also perceived by the biggest part of the Western society as well. That's an existential one. Using Ukrainian Nazis as a proxy, the West is killing our people, our citizens, but actually the West is killing everyone, including those who they believe are theirs, and they do not even recover the corpses. Now, when Russia collects those bodies, does some work to identify the killed ones, and asks to collect, to recover their corpses and bury them. There is no religion, there is no global tradition, there is no such an experience of a mankind that the bodies of soldiers would not be recovered. This is a shame and disgrace. This is an awful tragedy of the present-day man who was brought by the liberal ideology to a total destruction of the dignity. Those who were sent to fight, those who were empowered to fight for the country and for the people, they have to be buried with glory, following the tradition, following all the canons of the faith that you profess. There is no better proof, and there has never been any better proof to the fact that this regime and those who sponsor that are dehumanized, even in the not even in the attitude towards the live ones, but to the dead ones. 10 days ago, on the day of children protection, the terrorists blew the railways, killing children and women, including a 5 month baby. His mother, Violeta Garinia, a doctor from a children's hospice, was killed in such a terrorist attack arranged by the Ukrainian regime, and you always have to add, sponsored by the West. And now, our doctors try to save the life of that baby. And we are praying for him. I do not know anything about his future. And really, we try, we do our best in order to save every single life. Just like we said, a hybrid war is being waged against our country. But let us put that straightforward. That's an armed conflict, and thousands of our soldiers right now are fighting along the front line, while the public officials of the West openly say how they are dreaming, and I start quote, to defeat Russia strategically, end quote. But the truth lies in the fact that these hybrid wars waged not against one country and against one nation. We just stood up on the front line. We stood up with flying colors, but in essence, this is a hybrid war against what we value and cherish, that all people of all religions, all faiths, of all nationalities value and cherish. All the people of different generations, this is a war against the truth, against justice, against love, and against the God. Is it not true? Have a look. Look at how many churches, monasteries, and holy relics have been destroyed. They use excavators in order to excavate the bodies of the Red Army soldiers who 80 years ago would be fighting for the future of the next generations. And let me get back to what I used to speak before. Remember, we started our conversation about the system of the Concert of Europe. This is how, actually, that system would be called, the system that was shaped after that meeting in Vienna in 1815, the Concert of Europe. And now let us move again to Europe, to the city which is located next to Vienna. That's Munich. Speaking this year at the Munich conference on the security policy, and I love speaking about that. President of Finland said, I feel, this is what President Stubb said, that I feel that the Munich Secret Conference, that was my most favorite of all the conferences, has become a diplomatic cacophony. He said, we in Europe have to listen to what the Americans say, and we have to assume more responsibility, end quote. I'm not sure that he knows anything about that very great concert of Europe. And probably his education allows him to use such terms, and probably he cannot even guess how correctly he has characterized that situation. That 200 years, over the last 200 years, that concert got broken and turned into a cacophony. And it's high time for Europe to take the map to understand that there is no Europe without Russia, either in terms of geography, either in terms of history or culture. Russia is Europe. Bear in mind the true values that we have preserved that underlied Europe, the Western Europe. Over there, not only they have destroyed that, and probably this is not the most scary thing, that they have destroyed their values. There is even scarier thing when they now mock at the values. And until they realize that, there would be a cacophony instead of a concert. And the same is true for the values. And they do something to undermine those values, probably keeping that low profile, and they're using not just the force. And they do not put even the human lives on the stake, but they put on the stake the very future of the civilization. And the ultra-liberal project is confident that the freedom in the distorted understanding should replace and substitute all other components of the human society. But this is not a real freedom. This is a false freedom. This is about a dependence on everything bad, on the evil, on what different religions call the sin. That mankind is dehumanized. You become free of any morality. You are free of any limitations and restrictions. And I do think that Fyodor Dostoevsky put that very right. Am I an animal, or do I have the right? Can I do anything where there is something above me? This is the way to dehumanizing, to putting an end to the human identity, when we understand that a man repeats the image of the Lord. Such a distorted understanding of a freedom. This is not just a fight against a man, but this is a fight against the God Almighty. Whether you call that the supreme reason, or some say God Almighty, others say that this is God, but we understand what we're speaking about. We somehow feel that throughout the whole history, people try to describe that, express some philosophical views of that. They anticipate that, they feel that. People are just discovering that. And this is the fight against that very entity, that very essence. So therefore, liberals try to cancel the basic common human categories. They're popularizing euthanasia. They are not speaking about the tragedy of a man. They do not try to mitigate the pain. They try to instill that as a norm. Why taking care of the ill people? Why actually calling to the conscience of the parents and of the children of such a person? You can just urge the person to commit a suicide. And others would remain in the comfort zone so that it is comfortable and convenient for them, pleasant for them. What it leads to? Does it lead to the fact that the people would stop suffering? No. That leads to the fact that people lose their conscience. What is it about? This is our main barometer. This is our main meter, main bearing that helps us to shoot to the light, not to get lost in the darkness. They are legalizing lethal substances, knowing that these substances would kill people, and they legalize them. Moreover, They even use pop culture in order to impose those things. Let me share one brief example. 1990s, and you remember that, I do not want to spell out what drugs, what medicine would they propose to the young people, under what guise and where. At discos. And at disco, this is an opportunity to dance, to have rest, and in 1990s, and in Russia, and in 1980s in the West. Discos has become a channel to disseminate and proliferate certain substances. Why? As the parents were told, don't worry. Otherwise, how the children would be able to dance until the morning? But probably they don't have to dance all night. Probably a couple of hours would be enough. And the parents would be told that those substances are being consumed responsibly, so, and go on as a hand in glove. So if you want to dance until the morning, you have to take certain drug.
Remember that generations of people got maimed by this. This is the combination of the mass culture and the legalization of these lethal substances. Some people just get killed right away because they get addicted right away, and others have to suffer from a delayed effect. They first become very keen to an animal, and then they would have to die. They would be offered the option to die. And right now, these are no longer dangerous substances, as I said. They are killing substances. You know perfectly well. We don't know whether there is a road back from those realms. This is a direct addiction. That abases man, and you see that out in the streets, and they do everything to legalize all of that. We were sitting at a talk in one of the countries, and our partners, very good people, said to us, we found this very good substance that can or way to reduce crime-related offenses, and our experts took their pens and about to write them down. They were thinking that they found this. Well, their response was to legalize drugs. They thought that, according to their logic, there would be less of narcotics-related crime. Decriminalize this. But they forgot that it's mankind that will become the victim, and not just the current generation, but the next one as well. But that's not something that you talk about. They try to keep mum about this. And of course, their favorite trick, imposing direct degradation of mankind's qualities by introducing gender reforms, destroying the personality. But the most terrible thing is that they're doing this. They are making the killing of unborn children the norm of behavior of a contemporary man, not just for a woman, but for men as well. Not just for men, but also for women. I'm talking about couples. And one of the main problems today of mankind is that neither man nor woman are not stopping each other from doing this. They're not begging each other not to do this. They're not trying to stop them from doing this. This is just a hiccup for them, which is something that can be dealt with. I mean, get this result. But I'm talking about life here. There's a soul there. There's a future destiny in there. And this realization will eventually catch up with you, especially in the case of a woman. But that's not going to happen until later, when you cannot do anything about this. You can only pray that you would be redeemed and still feel the pain. But they are even suggesting to go further and not talk about these things. It's like, let's not talk about those hurtful things. These people are not hurt. They are killed from inside. They are burned from inside. Their soul is burning. And they are suggesting that we also keep mum about that as well. And they want to go even further. They've, crossed all the borders there. I'm talking about the problems of the future. That's what I would refer to as dark enlightenment. I've I'm sure you've heard about this. This concept was born within tech corps. Probably they don't have apostles of this movement. This is an abortive child of today's society with an anonymous internet, with the fakes and simulation of reality. This was coined by Nicol End, a philosopher from the UK. He called an essay called The Dark Enlightenment. Let's quote from that work. Where progressive enlightenment sees political ideals, dark enlightenment sees the desire. One of the main components of this dark enlightenment is tech acceleration. What does that mean? That means anti-progress, counter-progress. That's what you turn progress into. So if you repudiate those values, political and others, that, according to them, will allow mankind, and again I'm quoting here, to liberate itself and accelerate. End of quote. Well, the problem of mankind is not associated with any acceleration or anything. The problem stayed the same for millennium. And look at today's drugs that have been developed to treat diseases and the medical equipment. The problems remain the same. The suffering, love and lack of love, jealousy, aggression. Just read ancient texts from antiquity to today's times. Everything is the same, but they're not talking about them. They prefer not to talk about that. What are those acceleration tools that they are proposing? That's the weapon of the new times. There are two types of them. One of them is the AI technology that should control those who advance this dark enlightenment. I'm not saying that's the way it's going to happen, but I'm saying that this is what they are nurturing as ideas. The other part deals with the genetic and transhumanistic technologies. We've heard about all of that just recently as part of the gender delirium. The adepts of dark entitlement believe that we need and could program the individuals, including one's sex, one's gender. And that's just the beginning. Just the other day, one of the U.S. reproductive companies published a commercial. It has a name. It's all out in the open. It's a U.S.-based company that offers services of affecting the genotype of a child prior to the birth of a child and modulate it. Doesn't it remind you of anything? This isn't an available option. I'm not going to go into the details, but to be very honest with you, there has to be a limit. And we understand there are no boundaries there. The parents are offered to come to a genetic stores and just basically assemble their child as they would with a builder's set. And nobody is talking about what's going to happen to the child afterwards. The important thing is to sell the service, to, fan this desire, to make it a passion. And then you can both control the parents and their child. So, doesn't this remind you of anything? Of course it does. Of course it would. We all remember those Nazi ideologies, the eugenics, the creation of a perfect man, an ideal man. And this interfaces really well with the race theory. The technologies were more primitive at the time. They didn't have accelerated progress or progress with acceleration, but the ideology was the same. The idea was to breed inequality. And then they would say, okay, well, there is a canon you have to fit. And if your nose is a little bit longer, your ears are bigger, then you are not worthy of living. And it's all going towards that goal. And if you don't program the child to be a perfect individual, then why would that child be born? We have been taught that man is imperfect, sick, doesn't have the ability to basically get cured. Well, there's an option of euthanasia. And you can even treat this disease and, nip it in the bud before the child is born. They make it a norm. They call it the new normal. There is no new normal. That's something that is not normal. There's no new ethic. There is ethics that is based on traditions, history, values, true values. And that, of course, would be adjusted as we advance our science and culture. So that's something we accumulate. But definitely no one has the right to rewrite what had been written before us by our civilization, thanks to which we are alive here, and thanks to which we are making these fantastic discoveries. Well, they are saying this, okay, we are making the discovery today, but nobody is mentioning where this new thing, you know, appeared for the first time. Let's forget about those originating countries. That's what they're saying. Is that okay? For now, this concept, for now, is elitist. It's not for everyone because you need money, you need the opportunity, but it is now only geared for the, you know, rich benefactors. Let me not mention the Rockefeller, who lived until he was 100 years old and had 8 heart transplants. And should I mention the wars that were in Yugoslavia? No one got punished for that. No one of those who organized that. And you still have the monuments established there in Kosovo to those who were behind us. Now this black transplantology is still thriving under the guise of the Kiev regime, who in 2022 changed their laws to ensure that extracting body parts could happen as simply as possible without requiring any desire or agreement from an individual in question. That's probably why they are not taking their corpses, because a lot will be found out. There have been a lot of examples. We've given them in the heart of Europe, in the West. There is online trade, and you can buy, you know, parts, spare parts for your body from Ukraine. Has anyone from international organizations who are supposed to monitor that, has anyone asked the question, instigated an investigation or issued an order? Of course not. This is huge business. Now, the adepts of this dark enlightenment want to do biohacking and gender studies and get into the heart of the deep state of the Western countries to, you know, direct its development. That's another way to, you know, become one with the government apparatus in those countries who do not object to this. This is a new type of a conflict. And they are saying this openly in the book, The Tech Republic, Hard Power, Soft Beliefs, and the Future of the Future. Alex Carr, one of the adepts, is saying that we need to build a new 1,000-year-old Republic of the West, similar to the plans to build a 1,000-year Reich, remember? What has changed? The philosophy, the inners are the same. And why are we doing this? In order to debunk the obsolescent ideas. And what do you mean? What do they mean by those obsolescent ideas? Let's be honest, traditions. Real and true values, so that this future new normality, new normal, would reign supreme. With a man that doesn't have any idea about what life is about. There are no beacons, no bearings, no foundation. You can do anything with them. We could probably omit talking about this, but many do, and they either do this for a hefty sum of money or invest hefty sums of money in the development of these technologies. And I think we quite often mark or tease those who believe that the Earth is flat. We believe that this is just a an inside joke, but there are millions of those who believe that. That's the logic that has really taken root with, you know, space speed, lightning speed, and they have materials, they have photographs, and even some numbers, some calculations and formula they use. And the same goes here. But here it's going to be much more drastic and with more dire consequences, because this logic is presented as something simple, easy to explain, which doesn't require deep knowledge, but it can propagate really quickly. What can we do to respond to this under given circumstances? I'd like to appeal to the past and to the future, or reference the past and the future. What we need to do is do what our amazing ancestors did. One, we need to support, without any qualifications, those who are ready to give their life in this fight of the light and darkness. And they are definable, they are standing at full height with flying colors, and they are taking bullets as they fight for love of their neighbor, of their friends, of their motherland, of the land that their ancestors spilled blood on, protecting it against the enemies. They are protecting the sense of justice, not pride or personal benefits, but something driven by the respect for tradition, for history, for values. The decisions of the Congress of Vienna of 1815 that laid the foundation for the lasting peace in Europe, that later on gave rise to the beginnings of the results of the Potsdam Congress and allowed us to avoid the Third World War, at least in the last 80 years. There were conflicts, but there were no world wars. Had you thought? And that's an important question and something to ponder. Please try to think about this. Have you thought that the peace between the World War I and World War II was so short because Russia basically delved itself into the revolutionary events and it didn't take in the conference after the First World War? This is just a question, but this is a question that has the right to be asked. A stable and war-capable Russian army has been a guarantee of security, not just of our own country, but also of our allies and our friends of the entire global community.
In 1945,
our country invested the might of the victor. It was not invested in being called the center of the universe, in being the exceptional nation. No. We invested ourselves in the decolonization of the entire world, in making sure that countries, ethnicities, people that couldn't have dreamt about being free and independent and sovereign could become ones. So that for long decades and centuries, the notion of shackles would, you know, be relegated to the hips of history, so that they would stop selling people on market squares, at slavery markets, so that they would stop considering an individual a good, a commodity. And that's what the Russian, the Soviet people, the multinational ethnic Russian and Soviet people invested in. And the world had not regretted this, not a single time. And of course, we need an active search for philosophical answers to the eternal questions. And as Dostoevsky once said, these are the damned questions. And the search, this philosophical search, should be concentrated not on these new dark enlightenment theories, not on the tech singularity, not on the gender fluidity or things like that, but it should be focused on the roots and the foundations of our civilization, on traditional religions, true values.
Вот там вот.
That's where, in the history,
черпает силы.
Everyone can gather what basically shaped them as an individual, as a representative of their society. And that's what they wanted to repeal just recently under different guises, using the names like the globalization process or deglobalization process. There have been a lot of new names, the new ethics. It didn't work out, and it wouldn't, and it won't. It's not an easy path. It's a thorny path, but we need to go down that path. And our country has concentrated on a search for answers, for insights in this area, and not just inside the country. And that's what our Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov spoke about yesterday. That has become a part of our international agenda. This is a part of our concept of our foreign policy, of Russia's foreign policy. I would like to conclude my presentation by a quote from a great director of today, Alexei Balabanov, who said, the purpose in life is to find your own and come down. And he has the right to do that. He has already become a part of history of our planet, in the history of our culture and art. And I would like to start proceeding from this quote and offer a different option.
We have to find ours. That's the very meaning in our life, but not just to actually have a rest, but not to be put to rest by others. I don't know how much time is left, but if there are any questions, I would gladly take them. Ms. Zakharova, I have a soldier of the Special Military Operation. May I ask a question? Good afternoon. Good afternoon, dear Russian people and guests of our country. I'm, as a man, as the non-commissioned officer, airborne troops of Russia, I'd like to thank you, Ms. Zakharova, for this brilliant contribution. Thank you so much for the image of a beautiful Russian woman. Very often we watch your presentations and we admire your beauty and your emotions. And lots been said about our national and moral values, goals that we have to address in future, to attain in future, in due course to the future. And this forum is called Future 2050. We all know that the collective West numerously showed aggression against Russia, the Napoleonic Wars, the World War I, World War II, the Cold War, are the examples of that. And end of the day, it resulted in the special military operation and culturalist operation in Ukraine. Our predecessors during the World War II sacrificed 26 million lives for the right to live in that country, to use the natural resources and mineral riches in order to improve the life of the citizens of the USSR. And the beneficiaries were the Soviet people, and that gave its result. These are the Soviet people who granted to the mankind an opportunity to go to space. I see you as my competitor. So the collective West is waging a hybrid collective war against Russia, against our ideas, and against our moral values. And the collective West is seeking to defeat Russia strategically. It means that Russia, according to the plans, could be destroyed, and the Russian people have to be subjected to a genocide. Not only the Russian people. Look at what is going on. The experiments that were held and that are still being held on the territory of Western Europe, in the United States, in Canada, and in other countries of that NATO alliance, are these the Russian people were the children, people of the Russian Federation who are suffering from that. Now, these are their own children. They do not launch experiments against the same category. This is an obsolete, outdated category for them. They are aiming at a man in general. This is a more scary thing. It is even more humiliating story. And I actually find it difficult to assess the degree of the evil. I was shocked 10, 15 years ago when I saw the programs, TV programs that were imposed on their mindset, or were imposed on their parents and mothers and children to promote the transgender concept, that you can use surgical means to change the gender, and being addicted to the hormonal therapy. So this is a war not against certain category, as used to be under the Third Reich, when they singled out the category of undermen. But now, that's the whole mankind that put on their dish, and they do that with the representatives of different nationalities. And it is even more terrible that they're sacrificing their own children. And the today's
элиты в некоторых западных странах начинают
of the elite in the Western countries, despite assassination attempts, despite resistance, they try to raise a question: how to put an end to that? How to break that? Although we are now subjected to a direct terrorist threat, this is a real fact, and we keep saying about that every day. But don't you think that we are the only victim of the West? And I said in my presentation that the very goal, the target, in the crosshairs, you find the whole mankind. Yes, I got that from your presentation. And this is what I wanted to say, and you interrupted me, but thank you so much. Ms. Zakharova, I have the following question. We are speaking of the new course in the foreign policy of the future. Russia, to keep its leadership in the foreign policy, it has to strengthen its domestic policy. It means that we have to build a strong state. So it means that the executive authority has to work for the sake of the Russian people. The main beneficiaries of that activity of the executive authority has to be every single citizen of the Russian Federation. And end of the day, the special military operation has resulted in that change in the meaning and the essence of the work of the executive authorities. It means that we have to change, to amend the constitution that was adopted in 1993. Now, it has been amended. Now, we took amendments, but we have to change that dramatically. Ms. Zakharova, you have other speakers. So let's speak about the foreign policy. And they would be in better position to answer that question. Can you ask a question? Because they are the volunteers. I respect them. Should you have any more questions? Okay. So what is the main meaning of the special military operation? Speaking about our spiritual values, traditional Russian spiritual values, what is the essence, the meaning of the special military operation?
Ну, вы хотите, чтобы я сказала то, о чем вы только что сказали, переподтвердила?
Do you want me to repeat what you have just said? You know the official objectives of the special military operation, and that doesn't require any repetition. If you speak about the values and the meaning of the special military operation, one of the dimensions, there are huge such dimensions. I will identify only one, because we are lacking time. Those people who followed the testament of the predecessors, who allowed them to to be born. How can we leave them one-on-one with the trouble which is called neo-Nazism? So it means that the previous generation made sure that they released that land, freed that, liberated that land, liberated that territory from Nazism, and monuments were erected, and special dates were set to commemorate that. And for many decades, the people would be living using those testaments, real testaments, because this is a holy war, and never no one said that the history could be revisited. This is an absolute truth. Nuremberg tribunal, the trial, and the trial in Vladivostok passed on their judgment, and there was no questioning that the country is the winner, and the people is the winner who followed clear international legal framework. And Nuremberg trial judgment should not be challenged either in terms of the international law or in terms of the morality. The results of that war, the Second World War or the Great Patriotic War, cannot be challenged, cannot be revisited. And most importantly, the people who followed those testaments, they were born just because their predecessors stood up and destroyed and expelled Nazism. And all of a sudden, the West sponsored and recruited and trained the terrorists and extremists in the Baltic states and started restoring and instilling that Nazi ideology, which now is called neo-Nazism. Why we call that neo-Nazism? Because they have the new technological and ideological superstructure, and they turned into neo-Nazism. They were not direct calls, but they relied on the Third Reich ideology. Even they using the same symbols, and they are using the same engine, such as a kind of a segregation, that someone are entitled to something and others are not entitled, just because someone put them on certain privileged list and others actually are put on a different list. As Joseph Borrell said, someone are living in a nice garden and others are living in jungle and have no right to anything else, and they have to service that beautiful garden. Certainly, we could not but stand up with those who suffered, those who asked us for that, and who showed their courage to go to the very last. We are professing the same values in terms of the history, in terms of morality, in terms of our internal identity, in terms of the international law. We were right. And there is no controversy about that. This is just one dimension. And as I said, there are many more dimensions to that. Yes, please. Let us get back to a question after I answer the question from that person. So you will stand up and ask a question. I will talk to you one-on-one. Ms. Zakharova, my name is Gleb. I'm a student of Tumen State University, specializing in foreign affairs, and we are kind of colleagues. That's why I would like to continue the topic that you have raised with the Concert of Europe, because as we know, the Vienna system emerged after we defeated Napoleon, that Antichrist of the 19th century. Now, in the 21st century, we again are fighting against the Satanist Western civilization, not against the people of the West, who also are victims of that phenomena, because the Western nations are not represented by Stammer or Merz, but they are represented by Mr. Galloway and other speakers who are sitting in the first row. I have the following question. Do you think that, well, actually, we are about to speak about the new course in the foreign policy of the future, and in order to defeat the great Satan, we have to get united around those holy pillars that underlied the concept of Europe, because it was a spiritual alliance first and foremost. Now, on the brink of that confrontation, we can set up the Holy Alliance 2.0, the traditional alliance of patriots who stand up for the traditional values, who could do that everywhere in the world, including the Western countries. Should I answer your question? What is the question? Well, concerning the future and how we can assess that, well, in the beginning of the World War II, no one would even think that the place that would give birth to Nazism, dozens of millions of people would trust that it used to be public ideology for many countries. No one would even think that
называя себя антифашистами, что когда-нибудь диссолюция в
eventually, actually,
антифашистские движения,
antifascism, public figures and resistance movement that actively protested against Nazism. First they were dispersed, then they united, they brought together efforts, and they became one of the forces that defeated Nazism. Those who know the history of late 1930s and early 1940s know that this is a fact, that then it was one of the most persecuted groups of people, people who resisted to Nazism would be marginalized ideologically and would be killed physically. But as a result of that, anti-fascist movement, resistance movement, with no detriment to other forces, has become one of the drivers that liberated the planet, Europe, Western Europe, from Nazism. And as the proverb goes, road of 1,000 miles starts with the first step. We have to do everything possible to bring together all the efforts, all the forces. Many are afraid, but we are not afraid. We're not afraid, not just speaking in that room, but anywhere else. Sometimes they speak about the sanctions pressure, but this is a trade war which is supported with acts of terror against Russia. But we're not scared about that. But on the contrary, we got mobilized. We made our choice, and the people who are like-minded, who share our viewpoints, they are numerous, and we have to pull our efforts together. And still, I would call these people anti-fascists. This is not a matter of religion or faith. The rationale of segregating the people, differentiating the people, falling race, ethnicity, nationality, other features, failing on some standards, that rationale certainly should not exist. This forum is another opportunity to pull together our efforts, to get united. Dear guests and participants of the forum, thank you so much for your questions. This session is over. No, that's the wrong person. Can you ask a question about the Minsk Accords?
Дайте микрофон, пожалуйста.
Я Алексей, доброволец Донбасса.
I'm Alexei, I'm a volunteer from Donbass.
Ваше мнение в
14... Can you comment?
Могли?
In 2014, could we?
К чему мы пришли в году 22-м?
Actually,
политическая ошибка.
Do what we are trying to do since 2022. Was it a political blunder or a mistake? And now, once we sign agreements with Uzbekistan, And my combat friends are being prosecuted there because they are fighting for us. During the special military operation, they are put in jail for that. How we are signing treaties with Kazakhstan, which quite recently signed a military agreement with the UK. And the UK said that, openly stated that they're going to fight against us. What do you think about that? What is your take on that? Well, you asked three questions at least. Let me start with the first one. Do you think that in 1930s we could do anything to prevent the World War II? Well, actually, some efforts were made. The people were doing something to prevent that situation in 1940, so the Minsk Accords. Probably you're familiar with the text of the Accords. What was it about? Is it just a declaration? Let us not proceed with hostilities. Let us just altogether hope that the miracle would come true. Is it what the Minsk Accords are about now? Were they signed by just experts and political scientists? No. Were these Accords drafted out of nowhere? No. This was a recipe, a formula, how to avoid the hostilities. It was a very specific roadmap that was supposed to be followed. Now everyone tells us, says that Russia is an aggressor, but what we say, 7 years, we did our best that this peace plan is implemented. And I think that you will tell the same to your children, to your grandchildren, and they will tell to their grandchildren, just showing that the Russian Federation developed that roadmap. And on the one hand, this was a local story, and it concerned only one part of the European continent. And the United Nations resolution is mandatory for everyone, is binding for everyone.
So you are referring to something you call an error, but this is part of international law. And now, no, that's not international law that has discredited itself. If you have a law that says you cannot kill, the murderer cannot discredit it. The murderer has to be punished. But the law will stay, because without law and regulations, mankind will exist in a chaos, in a state of chaos. Therefore, crime cannot discredit the laws. That's the way our life is. It may be imperfect, but that's the way it is. And talking about the Minsk Agreement, it's not just about the geostrategy, not just about, you know, withdrawing troops to a certain line of deployment. It says what we had just been talking about, answering your first question. We're talking about what values should reign supreme, the language, the right of the people to determine, based on their traditions and local elections, to determine their way of life without any undue pressure from outside. That's a unique historic document. Everything has been done to ensure that that would be the case. But on the other side, they wanted a different thing to happen. Your next question was about how can we... Well, your last question was regarding... The UK is saying that they want to fight us. And did you just hear this now, that they want to fight against us? We just need to remember that. You're talking about errors. Our common error is that, unfortunately, and that was part of your question, until when is this going to happen? The answer is forever. As soon as we start believing that a particular victory puts us a full stop at the end of something, that means that we are already losing. Because forever we'll be fighting our own passions, our own sins, our own deficiencies. We need to do that until we end. So we need to fight for our interests, national interests, fair interests. And that is a continuous thing. It doesn't have an end state. There is none. And in our case, we often have this feeling that we just need to do this and then we can relax. Isn't that so? That also speaks volumes about it, us from a good standpoint, because we are for peace, for friendship, for everything good, and every time we expect that we are going to find those that are like-minded, and or we are going to convince others that our position is right. That's the way we are wired. Look at our lore, at our myths, at our fairy tales. That's our foundation, but we shouldn't propagate this mistake, thinking that so that something happens, let's say a set of measures is implemented, or a certain geographic point is taken, or a flag is put up somewhere, that would lead to something final. We could rest on our laurels. At that very moment, we would be defeated. That's an internal fight. That's what we talked about, the eternal fight, the eternal war that is taking different shapes, changes, different guises, but the basis of it is the same. You know, we are against abasement, we are against dehumanization. It's a continuing process. And at the end of the day, every policy, both domestic and foreign, should be underpinned by interests of the people. And what do we need to do to understand what they are? Today we are talking about this is based on the history, traditions, the values of the people, something people shed their blood for, gave their lives for. I'm not going to answer your second question because it's connected to the first and the last part. And let me answer two more questions. The ones that I believe you cannot leave this room. If you think that there's a question like that, please ask it. The young man over there. I wanted to thank you for coming here and for ensuring that we have adopted a number of laws, including Law 809. And while you should ask, thank the president and the whole country and the non-profits and the legislators. It's a synergy effort. Yeah, I would like to thank you for such laws as Law 809, which puts the spiritual over the material. And in one of your speeches recently, you said that the point of accord for the entire humanity is love. And that is going to be featuring in laws. Please explain to us how we can do this. If that had been my will, I had been talking about this for at least 18 months. There are decrees that are related to the traditional, spiritual, and moral values. There are 12 items in the list. 17, I apologize. And that includes everything. Please take a look at that. But there's no love there in that list. But how can it be? It cannot be that way. Because patriotism, compassion, friendship, and motherhood, and caring for the elderly, all of that is underpinned by what? Is it, benefits or well-being? No. It's underpinned by love. On the other hand, over the last decades, or maybe over the last century, through various works of art, through culture and influence, love is more associated with the heart sign, with arrows, with the mass culture, in a bad sense of the word. It's all distilled to emotions, passion between men and women, and then other things, including gender diversity, and just a little bit left for the relations between the parents and the child, and a little bit of love is left for patriotism. The rest is that represented by the heart sign. But love is a really all-encompassing phenomenon. It's not about our attitude towards one specific individual or several groups of people, a specific society, community, or country. Love is a state of our heart, a state of our soul, a state of our mind. It's a state of our thought. That's the way we refer ourselves to the world outside, the way we present ourselves to the world. That includes caring for the children, caring for the elderly, friendship, accountability, responsibility. Love permeates everything. I love those words of Mandelstam. The sea and Homer, everything is moved by love. Even our look at love and the world need to be based on love. Without it, without love, everything will be very different. Otherwise, it will be going into nothing. We need to love, and everything should be underpinned by love. And that would be counter to, you know, evil thoughts and jealousy. And love is an all-encompassing feeling. It's not a short-term feeling that it should come to us. Someone can ignite this in us. It could be parents, it could be grandmas and granddads who take care of us no matter what. Your loved one, your significant other, and others. And its perfect state is an all-encompassing emotion. It is with this feeling that we treat everything around us in this world. And I believe that it has to be there. Well, this has become a little bit trite, as many other words have. We just need to wash it and put it on a pedestal where it deserves to be. Thank you for your love. I cannot speak for others. There are representatives of other confessions and faiths. I strive to be Orthodox Christian. I study my religion. And in our system of values, God is love. And the moment you realize this, nothing is no longer contrived. You understand what your ideals are, and your heart and your mind become one. And you have this fantastic roadmap in your life that will always take you to the right spot to arrive at the right decision. I would have really wanted that list to include love. And I really earnestly and honestly and sincerely believe that all other criteria that are listed there are unimaginable without love. Just take one and imagine it without love. It'll just be a combination, a collection of letters. It'll be just too contrite, too compulsory. And we know what that leads to. And the very last question over there. Good afternoon, Ms. Zakharova. My name is Амелия Сергеева from the School of Film at Moscow State University. I'm working on digital diplomacy. Of course, the Russian Federation follows the official strategy when interacting with political opponents in its foreign policy, but the Western politicians are using social networks as a direct, you know, field for communication. Do you believe in that connection that digital diplomacy has pushed classical diplomatic channels away, and states with more developed information channels and communication means can more effectively influence the global agenda? I don't believe that digital diplomacy pushed anything aside. There are new technologies that are emerging at all times with the arrival of television. As you remember from one of our classic movies, some people believe that at some point there will be nothing, no theater, no books. But we still have everything, books and theater and television. They all coexist. New problems may emerge, and nothing traditional had been pushed out. The internet, when it emerged, everyone believed that nothing will be there. But still, television, radio, theater, and books are getting a new boost in their development. It's just a new supplement to what had existed before. So I'm confident that the new technologies that will be coming up and the new opportunities, philosophical ones and whatnot, are not going to replace, you know, interpersonal communication and that lives to diplomacy, international relations and so on. If that happens, then that's going to be too late. to worry about this. These are basic things. People talk to each other, they establish contacts. Of course, when the pandemic descended upon us, we turned on communication links, and we saved each other from the infection. We saved time, and it turned out that we could do this even without the pandemic. Some people are basically doing that over the online channels, but we've developed a new system. Some things got back, but we are also using new channels. You can connect to some conferences. We should do this. Why not? You save time by doing this, but interpersonal relations are still very important. They still have a place in our lives. I understand that you are working on your thesis. Come to us. We will provide you with all of the necessary literature and practical advice. And please give your contact to the organizers. And the last question for this young individual over there. Thank you very much for such a strong presentation. My name is Kirill. I study at Moscow State University at the Public Administration Department. Here we have some of my colleagues, and I wanted to ask you, as an effective politician, could you advise us on how we, as a future generation, can make Russia, you know, prosperous? Well, you don't think that I belong in that future? Well, I disagree with that. Well, first of all, I'm not a politician. I'm a public servant. I'm a bureaucrat, and I'm proud of that. Secondly, and what was the question? How can we, the future generation, can take Russia to the beautiful future? I think that before you start taking Russia to the beautiful future, you need to make the present beautiful. And over the horizon, there is a chest where, well, if you think that the future is there, you're mistaken. The future is here and now. If you can put, you know, trash in a trash can, or if you can put the lamp bulb in the right box, that's already the future that you're making happen. So you can do a lot of good things for the benefit of mankind, but it all starts with your trivial actions today. Just imagine that you are in the future. Just live in the future, you know, create there, love people, take care of the country. I've told you, every step matters, every step counts. Anything that you see around us is your test. And whether you are a good manager, and what do you need in order to be able to help a lot of people? You need to know the history of your country. We have a huge country. You need to study our history. The history is made before our eyes. And it's not easy. Just listen to Medinsky and read books, read philosophic theses, and read history. There are historic documents that you need to read, archives. And, of course, literature of fiction is also important. Go to museums. Which city are you from? I'm from Orenburg Oblast. I'm not going to start a quest or quiz. I sometimes ask people a question whether you've been to the local history museum. They wouldn't. They don't know after whom a street is named. That's common history when people live in their location. They don't know after whom the street was named. They don't know why the city was called. They don't know when it was founded. They don't know why it has such a coat of arms or a flag. I came to a region once, and I said, well, your flag is beautiful. Why is it like that? And they didn't know. And that applies to many. That's the start of that beautiful future, and it starts now. And time, the countdown has started. Thank you very much. Thank you.